There are fewer than 30 men in the world qualified to drive Formula One. A mere half dozen, perhaps, to win. At this moment, I'm inclined to think you're not one of them.
No, you want to.
Keep up the good work, and there you have it. There you go. With the qualifying.
Welcome to F1Weekly.com. My name is Clark Rogers. I'm the host of the program. I'll be joined by Nasser Hamid, my co-host. This is podcast number 1064, October 8th, 2024. Nasser.
Thank you, sir. I say McLaren minting money, Alpine powered by Mercedes, some are very pissed off, Michael Jordan teams up with Jacoby and Myers. We shall explain diligently.
Thank you, Nasser. On today's program, Louis Vuitton Moët Hennessy takes over while Rolex leaves Formula One. Formula E to host all-female driver test in Valencia. And Roger Penske is bringing IndyCar and the Dallas Cowboys together for the Arlington Grand Prix of Texas. And this week's interviews, we've got Nikola Soloff from Bulgaria, a brief chat, of course. And we bring back Nasser's conversation with F3 champion from Hockenheim, the late Jules Bianchi. At the time, Frederick Vasser was the team principal at ART. And yes, I must remind everybody, yet we do need your contributions to keep this program on the air. Just click on the Support F1 Weekly tab. You know you'll want to. Nas, welcome to the studio. How you doing?
Thank you, sir. No Formula One, but Formula Hurricane season in full swing in FLA. Good news is, sun will come up tomorrow, hopefully, and we shall have more motorsports in our lifetime. Where are we in California dreaming on the left coast?
Yes, we are always dreaming on the left coast, Nasser. That's why we have the song. But nevertheless, yes, we got Renault out, we got Michael Andretti out. Now we've got another Grand Prix in Texas for IndyCar, another street course around a stadium, very similar to Miami, so that should be interesting. And of course, that's for 2026. But Nas, I know you have a lot of stuff to talk about, so let's get going.
Well, they say money makes the world go round. So let's start with McLaren minting money. Numbers look good for the 2023 fiscal year. Revenue up 31% to £431 million. That's a lot of money. This includes their teams in Formula One, IndyCars, and Formula E. Profit was £30.4 million before tax, compared to a £9 million loss in 2022. Increase in sponsorship money and fall in interest payments were the main drivers behind the numbers, according to the team. Now we look at Red Bull. Red Bull gives you wings and Buco bucks. The team's 2023 revenue was £307 million, an increase of almost $30 million compared to 2022. Profit was £1.2 million. They were victims of their own success. Their entry fee for 2024 increased to $7.4 million or £5.6 million. And that is thanks to their uber success in the 2023 season. Now we come to the other side, how the other half lives. Williams, the bleeding never stops. Loss of 84.2 million pounds in 2023. Loss in 2022 was 17.9 million. Revenue was 127 million pounds. According to Valtteri, this is James, meaning Mr. James Vowles, Williams will have the strongest driver lineup in 2025. Somebody needs to check what Juan Valdez is grinding with their coffee in Grove. Mr. Rogers, do you agree with Mr. Vowles that Sainz Jr. and Albon is the best driver pairing for next season? Or could that be L.A., Lance and Alonso? What say you?
Well, I think it's a pretty good driver lineup. I mean, I don't think it's the best. For the best, you've got to have pretty much, what, Fernando and Max? That doesn't exist. Fernando and LCH? That doesn't exist. So, I don't know. But he's got to feel good about it because I'm sure they're paying Carlos a pretty big sum for Williams. So, no, but I think Albon is going to be surprised on how strong Carlos is. Albon is already showing fissures with Colapinto. So we'll see where Colapinto goes and whether Carlos will be able to continue the cage rattling.
Next on the agenda is Alpine powered by Mercedes. The guillotine has come down in Viry-Châtillon. Renault brought turbo power to Formula One in a yellow teapot at the 1977 British Grand Prix. This race also saw the debut of a complete unknown in Formula One, who will become very well known in a short time, Monsieur Gilles Villeneuve. The French company is the third most successful manufacturer in Formula One in terms of race wins, and we are talking as engine supplier. Their racing heritage is very impressive, going back to the very first Grand Prix in racing history, the 1906 French Grand Prix, which they won with Hungarian driver Francis on Michelin tires. But now, thanks to CEO Luca Di Meo and his paisan Flavio Briatore, they are saying bye-bye instead of bravo, bravo to their engine program. Most people will retain their jobs and the Viry-Châtillon facility will become a research and development center for their next L plan. This is a sad day in French motorsports. It will be a very expensive and daunting task to restart a new Formula One engine program down the road. The road can be very long, winding, and rocky to turn a GP2 engine into a championship-winning F1 engine. References are available on the track, and they will explain gladly. Mr. Rogers, you and I remember the glory days of Matra. Alpine won the first World Rally Championship in 1973. R. Nige won his championship with Renault Power. The victory at Le Mans in 1978 with Didier Pironi and Jean-Pierre Jossot. You have been suffering for the last few years. Is this the final nail in the coffin for you?
It does feel like the final nail. And I'm sure other internal combustion engines or units that are being manufactured, those manufacturers must be thinking, are we reaching the end of the existence of internal combustion engines in motorsports? I think we still have a few years to go, but on the other hand, if there's a good time to bail out when you're at the bottom, you might as well just bail out. So it's depressing, it's sad for the people of France and all those workers who will be retained for research and development, but indeed a very sad day for Formula One.
They say no one remembers who finished second. Unfortunately, for Jean-Pierre Jabouille, everyone remembers who finished second when he took his maiden victory, which was also the first win for a turbo engine in Formula One, as this historical moment was totally overshadowed by the battle for second place behind him in our favorite, the 1979 French Grand Prix at Dijon-Prenois between Gilles Villeneuve and René Arnoux. Okay, Mr. Rogers, before we take an Aqua Minerale break and go into Motorsports Mondial, let's appreciate and listen to another F1 Weekly first. A brief chat with young Nicolas Soloff, racing in Formula 3 this season. He is from Bulgaria and his backer is from Oviedo, Viva España. This brief conversation took place while both of us were in queue to pee. In other words, we were in line at the loo. As you can see, folks, we leave no stone unturned to bring you a constant variety of motorsports chit-chat.
So, Nicola, nice to meet you. I've been nice following your career for a few years. I have a question for you. You're from Bulgaria, right?
Yes.
How big is motorsports in your country in terms of karting and all that?
Well, not big at all. There's only karting races.
Uh-huh.
There is maybe a few car races with, but it's like, more a stock car, you know, just like that on the street, some cities, but there's not tracks. Karting, there's maybe 6 drivers per category, so it's not big at all.
Okay, so but there are some facilities for kids to go karting.
Yeah, there's 3 tracks right now.
And are you from Sofia or some other
Sofia,
town?
Yeah.
So that's the capital city, right?
Yeah.
Now, I remember some years ago there was a kid by the name, I think, Urutsev? Or something like that. He was also from Bulgaria, I believe.
Who?
He was, I think, racing in Formula 2 or GP2. I think he was from... Do you know him?
Arabajev.
Okay, I don't know how to pronounce that name.
Yeah.
Yeah, do you know
Arabajev.
Him?
Well, not personally. I've seen him race a few races in Bulgaria. But
okay.
Yeah. But, yeah. I mean, don't know him personally. I remember trying to ask him to sponsor me when I was in karting.
And is it, so since racing is not so popular, not many facilities, how did you got interested in racing and how did you get to where you are today?
I mean, I watched a few movies. My father was into racing.
Uh-huh.
He loved to watch it. He never actually raced himself. And then I was really quick from the first time I drove karting. I knew naturally what to do. So some people noticed me and told my dad that I'm fast, I have talent, whatever. And my dad said, why don't we try to race? We did one race and then decided to do the championship, won the championship. So that's how it got into it and step by step.
And that was all in Bulgaria, the first championship?
Yeah, first and second year were in Bulgarian karting, 2016 and 17. And then 2018 I did a few races in Italy, maybe 4. I was already on the podium in my third race, I think. So, yeah, we decided to do a almost full year in 2019.
Now, when and how did you hook up with Senor Fernando Alonso?
It was, I was racing under his brand in karting in 2020 and 2021. And, you know, it was not a top team. So I was doing much better than my teammates, was winning some races. So he decided to contact with me in the end of 21 and try and help me with my career because he knew that my financial situation is not so great. So he tried to help me with that. And,
so I'm assuming you have met him?
Yeah, of course.
Nice guy?
Yeah, we talk all the time. He's a really nice guy. Humble.
No, that's good. Now I have to ask you, based on what he said, his kart was not very quick in the beginning? His team was not very quick?
No, I think they were always quick, but they never had the best results.
Okay.
So when I went in the team, we worked together and we managed to get some good results that the team deserves. And you know, it's so, for me, it's been quick always, because now they're also winning in karting. You know, they managed, after me, they managed to get more good drivers that can provide.
And he's pretty much guiding. Who's guiding you, Alpine people or Alonso?
Oh, Most of the same issues you see in between that.
So are you a rock star in Bulgaria now?
Maybe kind of. I don't go back there often, so.
Yeah, okay. Where are you based, if I may ask?
I live in Valencia right now, in Spain.
Yeah.
But I like to go back to Bulgaria if possible more often, but it's just difficult with a racing calendar.
Okay. Will you do me a favor? I'm going to give you my card.
Yeah.
Okay. I live in Florida, okay?
Okay.
But since 2005, I do a couple of things. I report for this website. Here is my email address.
Yeah.
If you get a chance, shoot me an email, and I would like to call you on Skype and do a recorder interview for you.
Okay.
We have listeners all over the world, if that's okay with you.
All right. No
okay.
worries.
Are you on Skype? But we've mentioned your name a few times on our podcast because I know you're very good.
All right.
So we would love. So do you speak Spanish since you're living here? Oh, that's good.
Yeah.
Very good.
I understand Italian. I'm learning French now.
And you speak very good English, I must say.
Yeah, it's it's like my first language right now. Yeah. I speak it more than Bulgarian.
So. Yeah, cool. I'm sorry. Okay, all the best and thank you so much.
Thank you.
Okay, we'll be in touch.
Nikolai, thanks for joining F1Weekly.com. And Nasser, on that note, why don't we take a quick break? And we'll be back after these brief messages.
Hi, here's Fabio Leimer, and you're listening to F1 Weekly.
Welcome back to F1Weekly.com. Clark Rogers here, your host. And now, as we spin the globe and go around the world with Motorsports Mondial and the king, the Swami himself, Nasser Hamid.
And we start Motorsports Mondial with our usual. Greetings and racing regards. MotoGP from Motegi, the Japanese Grand Prix. Pecco picks win number 8. Francesco Bagnaia took his 8th victory of the season on his Lenovo Ducati. In the championship, he is now only 10 points behind Spanish rider Jorge Martin. Pecco's victory was win number 900 for Italian riders in MotoGP, so that is very impressive. He is shooting for 3rd consecutive MotoGP title and 4 races remain. So a lot of points on the table. Martin was second on Sunday and Marc Marquez was third. Next, sir, happy news for the Schumacher family. Gina Schumacher got married last week in parents' palatial palace in Mallorca. And of course, she is the daughter of Michael and Corinne Schumacher. Uncle Ralph was among the invited guests. No camera or cell phones were allowed. The only photo I was able to see was the happy bride with her mom and Jean Todt. And we wish the bride and the groom all the best and happiness. Next, Mr. Jimi Hendrix had a question. Are you experienced? Let's see who can answer this question from the F1 grid this season. Not surprisingly, numero uno is Hombre, who made his debut in 2001 with Kimi Raikkonen and Juan Pablo Montoya in Albert Park, and both of these gents are long gone from Formula One. The one and only El Machismo, Senor Fernando Alonso, has the most Grand Prix starts at this time, 394. Incredible. The following four are no longer in Formula One. Kimi, 349 starts. Rubens Barrichello, 323 starts. Michael Schumacher completes the top 5 with 307 starts. JB, aka Jenson Button, sits on 306 and Seb on 299 starts. Next up among the active drivers is Senor Sergio Perez, aka Checo, in 8th on 275 starts. Very, very impressive. Mr. Rogers, Nando will reach 400 Grand Prix starts in the season finale in Yas Marina. He has already experienced Indy 500. Do you think he will sail to 500 Formula One Grand Prix starts?
I think it's very possible. I mean, once he hits 400, you can't just stop. So, yeah, he could still be at Aston Martin at the end of 2026, sign on for another 2 years, and he'll reach that goal. Awesome stuff, isn't it, Nasser?
Okay, folks, now we come to monthly Mondial, and we will look at action, quite a bit of his ad in the month of October. From 1961 to 1980, Watkins Glen was the home for the U.S. Grand Prix in October. It saw some interesting first wins, like Innes Ireland taking his first win, and also first win for Team Lotus in 1961, which was the first ever Formula One race at Watkins Glen, and a beautiful track. And my shout out to Signor Pasquale for giving me a ride there. And in the near future, we shall do this again. In 1966, one and only win for a 16-cylinder engine when Jim Clark won the race in his Lotus. 3 years in a row, we saw maiden wins. 1969, Jochen Rindt in a Lotus. 1970, Emerson Fittipaldi also in a Lotus. And in 1971, one and only win for Francois Sever in a Tyrrell came at Watkins Glen. 2 years later, in 1973, Sever was killed during qualifying. His teammate Jackie Stewart withdrew from the race, so his amazing F1 career closed with 99 Grand Prix starts. The next year, there was another fatality when young Austrian Helmut Koenig was decapitated during the race. Other drivers who passed away in October include Denny Holm. He was 1967 world champion, first and only from New Zealand. He suffered a heart attack while racing in the famous Bathurst 1000. And when I was at Bathurst with our mate JB, excuse me, the original JB, Mr. Jensen Bentley, he gave me a few laps of the track, which is fantastic, and also showed me the spot where poor Denny stopped his car after he passed away, when he had his heart attack and passed away in the car at that spot. Next, Andre de Chazres. He drove for McLaren, Ligier, and many other teams. He started from pole position at Long Beach in 1982. He was killed on October 5, 2014 in a motorcycle accident in his hometown, Rome. His accident took place on the same day as Jules Bianchi's accident during the Japanese Grand Prix. Now we come to Gunnar Nilsson. This Swedish driver was Mario Andretti's Lotus teammate in 1977. His only victory came that season in the Belgian Grand Prix at Zolder. Nilsson was suffering from cancer and passed away on October 20, 1978, only a few weeks after the death of his countryman, Ronnie Peterson, following his accident at Monza. We move on to Joe Siffert. This Swiss driver was very successful in sports car racing with Porsche and had two Grand Prix wins, the 1971 Austrian Grand Prix and the 1968 British Grand Prix at Brands Hatch. It was at this track, located in beautiful Kent, that in a 1971 non-championship Formula One race, Siffert lost his life in a fiery accident. And as Mr. Carlos Reutemann told us when we interviewed him in Buenos Aires, this was Carlos Reutemann's first Formula One race. What a way to enter Formula One. Finally, the first Formula One race in the month of October took place in the season of 1951, and it was the Spanish Grand Prix at Pedralbes near Barcelona. The result was an Argentine 1-2, with Fangio winning in his Alfa Romeo over compadre Fraulein Gonzalez in a Ferrari. And it was in October, very sadly, that Jules Bianchi had a terrible accident during the Japanese Grand Prix in 2014. He passed away in 2015 without regaining consciousness. He was one of the friendliest and polite young drivers I ever met. Got to know him fairly well through my friend Olivier, who still works for Nicolas Tord's management company, All Road Management. In fact, you know, it's so interesting. When I got to know Nicola before this All Road Management Company was started, and he was, even at that time, was working for Nicola Todd. And I remember very well Olivier sending me an email that here is my new contact info. I'm working with the same people, and we are now starting a driver management company, and our first client is Jules Bianchi. The first time I met Jules was in 2008, I believe it was 2008 at Mugello, when he was in Formula 3, and I also met his grandfather, Mauro, who was also a racing driver. In 2010, I had the opportunity to meet his mom and dad at the Abu Dhabi Grand Prix. We remember him today by playing one of the conversations I had with him while he was on his way to Formula 1. So Jules Bianchi, gone, but definitely not forgotten.
Okay, the first interview we're going to play for you is from 2008. And then after that, we'll bring in the 2017 Hockenheim interview, both, of course, with Nasser Hamid.
Okay, this first interview is a young French driver, and he is doing a good job and has been very successful in junior Formula. Now he is with the ART team, which is co-owned by Mr. Nicola Todd, Bambino Jean Todd, and I saw him race at Mugello this year in April, and that's where this conversation took place. And his uncle, Lucien Bianchi, was the winner of the, I believe it was the 1968 Le Mans 24-hour race. And this interview was arranged by his manager, Mr. Olivier Mayenhu, who is from France, is now based in Switzerland. And Olivier and I have been business associate for a few years, and I want to thank him for his time. And Olivier will be here in San Francisco in August, so I'll hook up with him. And so thanks to Julien Bianchi and Olivier Menu for their time, and I hope our listeners enjoy the conversation, late conversation.
Okay, I'm here in Mugello with Jules Bianchi, and Jules, you finished third in the race, is that correct?
Yep.
Congratulations. First question for you, you are from a racing family. Your grandfather Mauro was 3 times champion in GT class, and your uncle Lucien was a Le Mans winner. How old were you when you decided to become a professional racing driver?
I was 10 years old, because I was driving a lot of karting. So with my father, we decided to do it.
Did you get any, were the family supportive of your efforts, or did they try to talk you not going into racing?
No, they support me a lot.
Okay. In karting, you were Asia-Pacific champion in 2005, French champion in 2006. And also did very well in Italian and European championships. How is the level of competition in different parts of the world?
It was all the time very good, because in karting everybody can be fast and it's more close the time, you know.
Have you ever raced in the United States? We do our program from US.
I don't know yet. No, never. Okay.
What are some of your best memories from your karting days?
It's my victory in Asia, in Suzuka.
Any other memories or races that stand out?
Yeah, the World Championship in Braga in 2005, because I started last and I finished fourth.
Now, most of the drivers these days come from karting. Can a person become a good racing driver without going through karting?
I think it's possible, but with karting you can get a lot of experience, so it's very good for get a good driver.
What is the most important thing you learned in karting that you now use in motor racing?
To be ready for professional, and to think about all the little things you can do to improve your driving.
Last year you were French Formula Renault champion with 5 wins. Which victory was the best and why?
Was Barcelona, because I really like this track.
Nicola Todd is now guiding your career. How did you connect with him? How and when?
He contacted me 2 years ago. And we signed a contract 1.5 years ago.
What was the biggest difference you felt in driving when you moved from karting to Formula Renault and from Formula Renault to F3 Euro Series?
The difference from karting and Formula Renault is totally different for me, because it's not the same driving. You have to, in cars you have to think about your driving, and in karting you just drive. And in Formula 3 it's same like Formula Renault. It's not very different.
Is there a big difference between the car and the handling of Formula 3 and a Formula Renault car?
It's more... No, it's quite the same.
What goals? What would you like to win or achieve this year?
I want to do all my best. I will do all my best to improve all the time my driving and to be better and better.
Who do you see as your main competitors among the rookies this year? And you are also a rookie in this series this year, right? So who do you think would be the main competitor for being Rookie of the Year?
I think Mika Maki is very fast, so we will see.
How is the relationship between drivers? You know, in F1, nobody talks to each other. Do the drivers in this series talk to each other? Is the atmosphere friendly?
Yes and no. With some driver, yes, and with some other, no.
Can we hear some names where you have friends with and some drivers are not friendly?
I am friend with John Lancaster and all my teammates, but after I cannot say.
Okay, your favorite track and city that racing has taken you? You've been to quite a few places in this world. What track do you like and what city?
I see. I like Mugello.
Looking forward to next year, what is the game plan for 2009?
I don't know. I have to make a good championship this year and we will think about the future after.
Okay. Felipe Massa is also managed by Nicola Todd. Has he given you any racing tips or invited you over for pasta?
Yeah, one time in Paul Ricard, I go to see him and he was very friendly.
And you already told me you have never been to the US, but do you follow American racing scene like IndyCars or Le NASCAR?
Yeah, I look sometimes.
Who's your favorite in American racing?
I don't...
Danica Patrick.
Sorry?
Danica Patrick.
Danica Patrick.
She's your favorite? Are you serious?
Yes.
Okay, good. Finally, how about a message for our listeners? And we have listeners in France also. So if you could say a few words in French also, I will appreciate. Anything you want to say to the listeners? Tell them about your website and, you know, anything you want to say. Nice things, you know.
Yeah. If you want to know me better, you can go on my website. It's.
And your website address is?
Is Jules. -bianchi.com.
Thank you very much. Okay, folks, I'm in the press room of Hockenheim Ring with a young gentleman from Viva la France who has just won the race and is also the 2009 champion F3 Euro Series. Jules, welcome back to F1 Weekly. What is the feeling of winning the championship and the race?
Well, I mean, it's a really good feeling for me. After Dijon, we did a really good job. To win here in Hockenheim was really special for me. Because after the first race in the beginning of the season was a bit difficult. You remember, I finished P5 and P3 and we were not really fast. So to win today, it's really important for me and for the team. We also won now the driver championship and also the team championship. I think it's over. I'm not sure, but I think it's finished now. We won. So it's really good for everybody.
Now, Dijon, of course, is in your home country. What was the feeling like? What was the first thing you thought of when you took the checkered flag at Dijon Prénois?
I was not realizing what that was finished, you know, was over the championship. I just make a really good race, starting P7 and finish P1. It was just great for me. I was just so happy.
Dijon Prénois is very famous for what happened there 30 years ago. Do you know what I'm talking about?
I'm not sure.
Okay, the Gilles Villeneuve and Reynard. Have you ever watched that on YouTube or a video?
Yes, of course, I saw it. Everybody saw it and was very special. And it's a really good track. It's just a fantastic track, really fast. And you can overtake, and as you see, 30 years ago, you can overtake, so it's really good.
Okay, 2009 was your second year in F3 Euro Series. You had a big win last year in the Masters of F3. What was the most important thing you learned last year that helped you win? I wrote down 8 races, but now it's 9 races.
Yes, I mean, I improve a lot about my concentration, about to stay calm when I'm not in position to win the race. You know, when I am like P3 or P4, I just stay here and wait to take points to the championship like I did in the first race here. And last year was my problem because I just wanted to win too much, so I did so much mistake.
Okay, last year your teammate was Nico Hülkenberg, who did win the championship. How was your working relationship with him, and did you learn anything from him?
Yes, of course, I learned a lot about driving style because you can see all the data of the other driver of each team. not each team, but I mean IRT can see all the data of IRT team, and everybody is like that. So last year I look a lot of his data, and I improve about this, but I was not speaking too much with him, because you know when you are already close between two drivers, it's difficult to be friends.
Okay. Now, this year you had three rookies, very promising rookies, just like you were very promising last year. Is pressure from within a team good for the driver, or would you prefer pressure from another team?
Oh, of course, it's good to have a good driver in my home team, in the same team, because after that you can look at the data, you can improve yourself. So for sure, it's better to have a good driver in your team than not a good driver, because you improve so much.
The first preseason testing took place in Estoril, Portugal, and you had the fastest time on both days. Did that give you high confidence for the championship this year?
Yes, of course, the test helped me a lot. We did a really good job. We work a lot. We test a lot of things in Estoril and also in Valencia. So for sure, was the most important thing is to get the championship well prepared. You know, if you arrive in the first race and you are well prepared, for sure you will do first part of the season really good. So you have to arrive well prepared, and we did it. We was really good prepared for the first race. I mean, normally yes, but for sure we had a problem in a rear bump in Hockenheim first race. So it's for that we were not really fast. But we were prepared enough, so it was good.
You took pole position for the 2009 Masters of F3 at Zandvoort, but then you were given a 5-grid penalty. How disappointed were you, and do you think the penalty was justified?
I mean, of course, I was a lot disappointed, because nobody won two times the Masters. So I was a lot disappointed, because we did a really good job. We made the pole position, so I cannot say nothing because the marshal decide like that. What can I say? Yes, of course I was disappointed, but they did our job.
Did you cry?
Yes, of course.
Okay, good. Nice to know you're human. Okay, Zandvoort was also the place where you scored your first pole position of the regular season. What was the reason for winning races but not pole till round 7?
Because, maybe a bit of bad luck in qualifying. Of course, in Nürburgring I had bad luck because the track was drying, and Alexander Sims makes the pole position in the last lap. So for sure, Nürburgring was like that. But I was all the time P2 or P3, so I was not far. And then in Zandvoort, everything was going really well, and I wanted to take my, how you say it, after the master, you know. I was angry, so I wanted a lot to win here, and I just push and work a lot with my engineer.
Okay. You won both races, going back to Zandvoort. Saturday win was special, as it was 100th win for Mercedes-Benz in F3 Euro Series. Did you get a big hug from Norbert Haug?
Not a hug, but for sure we spoke together, and it was really, really good to meet him.
What were some of the best moments and highlights and lowlights of this season?
For me, the best moment was Zandvoort, because I won two races in the same weekend, same meeting, so was for sure the best moment of the season.
Okay. There are several young drivers who are pretty good and fast here. Who impressed you most, and who was the biggest surprise for you in terms of speed among the other drivers?
For sure, Valtteri was very impressive this year. He did a very good job. He finished, I think he will finish P3 in championship. It's not sure yet, but normally it will do it.
Will you help him?
I'm not like that. It's not my goal. If I am behind him, for sure I will not brake so late and crash with him, but I will do my race and I will not look at everybody, because it's so difficult to do that.
But if you're leading and he's trying to win the race, you're going to say to him, adieu à la nuit?
Yeah. No, for sure I will not let him win the race if I am first and he is second. I don't want to do that.
Yeah. Now, separate issue. As a racing driver, you know what happened with the Piquet situation in Singapore. First of all, when you first heard it, did you believe it? And what's your thought on it?
No, I didn't think it was true. I just think it was bullshit. But at the end, it's true. So I don't understand that. It's his decision, so nothing to say.
Are there any team orders, not to crash, but during the regular season with ART between drivers, does the team issue any orders, or are team orders allowed in F3 Euro Series?
No. It's not like that. The team, yeah, for sure, Frederic, Vasseur come to see each other before the race. Like today, we were P1 and P2. We were racing for the team championship. So he come to us and say, "Be calm, don't crash together," and that's all.
Okay. Your dad runs a kart track in Brignoles. Do you race there when you get a chance?
Yes, I raced there. I was there 2 years ago because there were racing 1-5, you know, the gearbox karting. And now I'm not racing anymore because it's too dangerous to make racing karting. If I crash and if I break my arms or something like that, it's dangerous. So I just train and just play, have fun.
You are now headed to GP2 with the same team, ART. Two questions. What is the goal for 2010? And will the physical preparation change much from F3 Euro Series?
The goal for sure will be to win the championship. I will go there to win the championship. I know it's gonna be really difficult because it's a really high level championship, like in F3, but it's even more difficult with the pit stop and everything. You have to improve, you have to learn new things, pit stop and just the clutch, with hand clutch. So for sure it will be difficult, but I will try a lot, I will work a lot in the test in Paul Ricard. And also in the test of the first test of the season next year, and for sure I will change my physical preparation because it's a lot more difficult to drive a GP2 car than an F3 car.
Your teammate from last season, Nico Hülkenberg, also with ART, won the championship in GP2 this year. Was that a surprise for you?
Not really. I mean, I knew that he was really fast, so it was not really a surprise for me.
I would love to see you win GP2 in your rookie season. Okay, in 3 years you have won 2 championships. What is the advice you will give to young kids who are in karting these days? What steps should they do once they get into single-seaters?
I think if they really want, they will do it. So they just have to be concentrated to do their best, to work a lot on physical part because it's really important to learn English, as I still do because my English is not really perfect. And I have to improve everything, so just believe it.
Man, you can say bullshit, so you're doing pretty good in English.
Thank you.
Okay, you have always raced with French teams. Do you think when you drive for a non-French team, it would pose a new challenge for you? I'm talking about English also.
Yes, of course, it will be a new challenge for me to speak, to know the technical words and everything. For sure, it will be a challenge, and it will be, of course, better for me for the future.
I understand you also like football. What is your favorite team and who is your favorite player?
My favorite team is Marseille. It's a French team. And then my favorite player is, I think, Zidane.
It's Zinedine Zidane?
Yeah, it's not playing anymore, but he is the best.
He is. And he let the Italian team also know that.
Yeah, it's true.
Okay, a message for listeners of F1 Weekly, please. We report on all your success and you have a good following on our podcast. How about a message for them, please?
Just thank you to follow me, and I hope I will see you in the track, maybe in the future.
Oh, yes, I'll be waiting for that invitation for a Formula One race from you. Thank you very much, sir.
Thanks to you.
Jules, thanks for joining F1Weekly.com.
IBM presents You Make the Call.
Now we come to this story, we calling it Crossing Jordan. I think there are some names in the world of sports that are known to everyone, even if they are living under the rock of Gibraltar. One of them is MJ, the one who did his moonwalk in the world of NBA. He is now going very bullish and charging for a slam dunk against your favorite series, Le NASCAR. Both teams, 2311 and Front Row, are the only two teams which elected not to sign NASCAR's new charter agreement, outlining teams needed to have a bigger revenue share. According to reports, that the new deal they are offering is like 35-40% to the team, and it used to be 10-25% in the previous agreement. So MJ wants more. Who doesn't? Michael Jordan and his 2311 racing team, and Front Row also, have taken their battle with NASCAR, alleging NASCAR and CEO Jim Frantz have used anti-competitive and exclusionary practices to better their situations at the expense of premier stock car racing teams. Interesting. Now, both these teams have retained apparently a well-known attorney in this field, Mr. Jeffrey Kessler, and they are going against NASCAR now. And Mr. Kessler is most well-known for his work in establishing the NFL's free agency. So, Lay NASCAR, guilty or not, you make the call. Mr. Rogers, you are normally on the side of France, but this is Bill Franz, Familia versus Chicago Bulls. Whose side are you on?
Well, the France family do own NASCAR, and it is indeed a good old boy network from the very heart. I think they started in 1947 and stayed in the France family. And Michael, you know, he wants to break up the monopoly. So I understand everybody wants a bigger piece of the cherry pie, and Michael Jordan is a smart businessman. I think he's going to get what he wants, and it could change the face of NASCAR.
Now we come to Match Made in Heaven. Time has run out for Rolex as a Formula One sponsor, but more big money is coming to Formula One in less than a New York second. They have announced a 10-year deal with LVMH, Louis Vuitton Moët Hennessy, for only $1 billion, and Tag Heuer is also in the LVMH portfolio. So let's see what happens. Rolex was there for many years, and one can see their ads all over every race. So now I guess we're going to see for LVMH brands. And as much Formula One is thriving, as many F1 experience tickets they are selling, which are not cheap and not for the unwashed masses, I'm sure LVMH realizes the importance of this sport now, which is so, so big globally. And folks, hang on to your seats. Put the seatbelts on. Badoer is back. But don't panic. It's Brando, the son of Luca. He is now in the brown bag as McLaren has picked him up as a junior. They will put him in Formula 3 season next season. And let's hope his teammate is not Mass Junior. You know, interestingly, I was reading a press release from McLaren, and their commercial director and lady in charge of driver development, Stephanie Carlin, wife of Trevor Carlin, and you know, they ran a team for many, many years in British Junior Series, which now is known as Rodin Motorsports. And I've known Stephanie for many, many years, long before she came to McLaren, and she's always very nice and kind to me. Even when I met her at Imola a few months ago, she stopped and had a chat with me. So hopefully we'll get some more info in Austin, Texas. And I'm pretty sure she will be there. Last I met her was, as I said, in May at Imola, and also at had some conversation with her in Miami. And folks, now we come to famous last words, Carlos Ghosn. The hybrid era started with Mercedes domination. Renault was thrown under the bus by Christian Horner with no regard for winning four championships in a row with their power. Things got so bad, top three wise men at Red Bull, Mr. Horner, Dr. Marco, and Mr. Adrian Newey, went to see the Renault CEO, the now famous escape artist in a music box, Carlos Ghosn, in an effort to convince him to increase F1 spending so they can get more competitive. The Brazilian CEO of Lebanese Heritage said, and I quote, "I have no interest in Formula One. I'm only in it because my marketing people say I should be," end quote. Well, no wonder results are what they are. Do you have any say on this, Mr. Rogers? This is your home team, after all.
Well, our friend in Lebanon Mr. Carlos Ghosn. That's where it all ended, really, for Renault, for Formula One, for fans like moi. And it's very, very sad, but as they say, all good things do end. So it's been a fantastic journey. I can't wait for the specials on Renault on Netflix, which will never arrive. But somebody will do some kind of Formula One docu-series on the accomplishments of François Castaigne, Renault, 1977. And it's a great story. It's wonderful. There's so much to talk about, but it is over. And now we just have all the memories.
Okay, folks, finally we come to Musical Mondial. Kris Kristofferson passed away last week. He did a lot of things in his life. One of them was songwriting, and he was very good at it. Here is one of his best works. Bobby Thumbed a Diesel gives me serious goosebumps every time I listen to this song. It was also recorded by a lady who described herself as a simple girl from Port Arthur, Texas. Thank you for listening, and please enjoy. Till we meet again in the Palatial Studios, somewhere near Salinas. Bye-bye.
Freedom's just another word for nothing left to lose. Nothing ain't worth nothing, but it's free. Feeling good was easy, Lord, when Bobby sang the blues. Feeling good was good enough for me. Good enough for me and Bobby McGee.